Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code ODYSSEY. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's time.
It's time.
Time to get in the zone.
Time to get in the zone
with the 49ers Web Zone.
This is the No Huddle Podcast
with Al and Brian.
49ers Web Zone, No Huddle Podcast, part of the Odyssey Network. I'm Al Sacco with you, Brian Rennick as well. Brian, I'm drinking a Heady Topper right now. Have you ever had a Heady Topper? Probably in the West Coast, but you guys probably don't get those, right?
I have not.
Yeah. I haven't had a Pliny, it's called Pliny, right? It's
Pliny the Elder, yeah. Guys.
Yeah, this is kind of like the East Coast Pliny the Elder. So
All right.
That's one of the beers. If anybody wants to mail me a Pliny, because we don't get them on the East Coast, and I'm a big beer guy, that's like on my list of... beers
let
that
me,
I want.
Let me give you. Let me give you. If anybody is thinking about sending Al a Pliny the Elder, though, let me give you a hot tip. Because I tried to do that one time, and I took it to UPS, and they're like, "What's in here?" And I was like, "It's a beer." And they're like, "Please leave our establishment. You cannot send this."
Oh, you can't send beer in the mail.
No, because you have to have a liquor license in order to be able to do that. So if you do send it, just make sure that you don't tell anybody what's in it, and then they'll.
Yeah.
They'll
so send me Pliny the Elder, but do not. Low key, please. All right, Brian, this has been pretty fun week. I think free agency is always awesome. But before, look, we got to talk about Arik Armstead. I mean, what a career he had with the 49ers. They officially released him today. The biggest thing the two things I think with Armstead, as good as I think he was on the field during the regular season, what he meant to his teammates, what he did off the field for the community. You know, I was nominated for Man of the Year. That is huge. And in terms of being a player, I think when you step up when the lights are the brightest, to me, that's huge. So in 12 playoff games, Armstead had 8 sacks. He had 13 QB hits and he had 6 tackles for loss. I feel like when the lights were the brightest in the playoffs, he really stood out. He just got off a great Super Bowl. You know, if that's the last game we're going to remember from him with the 49ers and it looks that way, that's a great way to remember him because he was great and he played hurt. He had the torn meniscus or whatever it was in his knee. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just for him, I think for any 49ers fan, you just got to give him his props. I think everybody is just going to look back on him fondly and just thanks. Thanks what you meant to the community. Thanks what you did on the field. You know, 49ers fans really appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, and we talked about it last episode. You know, it feels – here's the biggest thing for me, a couple things that I'm bummed about. One, just like Jimmy Ward, Arik Armstead is going to miss the 10-year wall by one season. Jimmy Ward was a 49er for 9 years, and then they let him go. And now Arik Armstead, 49er for 9 years, they let him go. The last player to make it onto that 10-year wall is Joe Staley. And with the exit of Arik Armstead, Kyle Juszczyk is now the longest tenured 49er, which means that there are no players on this 49ers team that predate Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, which is kind of an interesting thing. But at the same time, you know, it kind of makes sense. We're going into year 7 with the regime. So, you know, the NFL is
the only player. Yeah. With Shanahan the whole time, essentially. Right. Cause he came in 2017.
Well, and Kittle and George Kittle. Right. Okay. Cause Kittle was drafted a month after Kyle Juszczyk signed with the 49ers.
Gotcha. All right.
And so Kittle and Juszczyk have been there from the beginning, but Juszczyk predates Kittle by about a month. So
I've heard of that Kittle guy.
Yeah, that guy's pretty good.
I'm vaguely familiar. He's okay.
And speaking of Kyle Juszczyk, took a pay cut or a restructure. It still has. I'm still not clear on that. I don't know if it's a restructure or a pay cut, but they did clear up about $2 million in cap space. And yeah, it just I still think the Armstead release, it just feels a little. The timing feels weird to me because, again, while they will get $18 million of cap space for 2024, they don't get to touch that money until after June 1st, which means that they are not going to be able to use it at all for any free agency, right? And so we think that a lot of this, a lot of these machinations, and we've talked about it, what they're doing with the roster, and we'll get into it more, has a lot to do with probably having to extend Brock Purdy next year and talking about the Ayuk extension, and they're going to need cap space to move over or to roll over, but they're going to get $18 million of cap space with this Armstead release. But he still is going to count $15 million in dead cap in 2025, which is brutal. Like that's tough. And what I don't understand is, you know, you probably could have kept him this season. They would have been under the cap, even with all these signings, without releasing Armstead. Yeah. 'Cause again, they don't get that money until June 1st. So it's not about getting cap compliant. And so it's just interesting. And I will be interested to hear if they ever give kind of a reasoning behind it, but it is sad to see somebody like that go. Again, just a stalwart in the community, a stalwart in the locker room, a leader. You know, Debo Samuel posted on his Instagram stories when the news hit that he was released, and it was just, I think it was like seven facepalm emojis, and that was it. So I think some of the players
are locker room.
Some of the players are upset, and that's you know, and we'll see. But yeah, it's an interesting, it's definitely an interesting time to be a 49er fan. And like I said, we're now a full on Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch team. There's no representation from the pre Shanahan era on this team anymore.
And this free agency period, it's been interesting to me because we've been talking about on the show that they're in a position right now where they still are playing to win it next year, but they're still retooling for 2025 because you have aging players, because you have contracts that are ending, because you have people that you're moving away from. Armstead is the first one. Now, obviously in the draft, they're going to retool for 2025 and beyond, but I guess I'm a little surprised, maybe I shouldn't have been. But I'm a little surprised at their approach to free agency because pretty much everything they've done, and we'll get into some of these specifics, but they've been Band-Aids. Now, what I mean by Band-Aids is a one, maybe 2 year fix. Like you just, they're there for a little bit and then you're going to move on. I had to kind of have, is Al okay, Garrett? So we're recording on YouTube. So we got some comments here. I'm a Yankee fan and someone asked, is Al okay? Garrett Cole news must have hit him like the Jimmy G ACL tear. I'm a little nervous. Cole is going to need Tommy John surgery. They're saying that he doesn't, but. We'll see. All right.
Are you excited about Blake Snell though?
I don't
feels
right
like
now
Blake
with Snell's, the Yankees.
Feels
I
like
can't,
he's a,
I can't comprehend anything. Like Judge is just like a left turn away from being out from the season, and now with Cole, like, I can't even deal. What was I talking about? Anyway, so I felt like, but these are like short term Band-Aid deals for like 1 or 2 years, and then I said to myself, okay, why are they doing? Here's probably why, and I think we have to, as a fan base or content creators or whatever, kind of wrap our heads around the fact that they're most likely about to pay a quarterback franchise money, unless Purdy has a horrible season, which I don't anticipate. If he's even somewhat comparable to what he was last year, he's getting a gigantic contract. So because of that, I feel like they're sort of acting accordingly this offseason, at least in free agency, where they're doing these 1 to 2 year deals, and then next year they pay. See what Purdy costs. We'll see where we are. Then maybe you see more of the bigger splashes if they can do it, like you saw with the Javon Hargrave and Mooney Ward and that sort of thing. So before I kind of get into what I think they did, Brian, that's where my head is sort of wrapped around now, why I think they're doing it this way. I mean, am I nuts? Does it sound reasonable?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, one of the things that we said prior to free agency starting is it seems like almost every year this team has has done something big either in free agency or in the draft. You know, you're talking about the D4 trade. You're talking about the Trey Lance trade. You're talking about Javon Hargrave, right? You're talking about Mooney Ward and, you know, and they've made at least what could be considered a splash. And so far that hasn't happened. And, and I think it hasn't happened because in order to make those moves, especially the last couple of years, they did a lot of restructuring. And for all the people that scream that the salary cap is fake, like, I understand the sentiment, but this is like Eric Armstead being released is a direct result of kicking the can down the road so many times with his contract that it became untenable for them. And, you know, mainly because he's a player that has missed some time and, you know, he's just not worth the, you know, the cap hit that they're, that they would have, with him on the roster this year. So it really is real. And the issue is that this team is up against it when it comes to the salary cap and the flexibility with the salary cap. And a lot of these players that you're seeing are band-aids. That's not wrong, but you know, part of why they need band-aids is because of the Trey Lance trade and things of that nature. Right. And so I think this is what we're seeing now is fallout from the Trey Lance trade, right? Missing out on all of those picks that they gave up to move up to draft Trey Lance. And then also a lot of restructures to make big splashes in free agency the past couple years. And that's where we're at. But you're talking about a team that is trying to toe the line between still trying to compete for a Super Bowl trophy in 2024 and also not hamstring themselves out of contention post 2024. And what I think they, and the other thing that I think, and we talked about this before we went live, was it feels like they're trying to get back to a little bit of the philosophy that they had under Saleh and D'Amico Ryans that they seem to get away from a little bit last season. And that was a defensive line that had two big name stars, right? From 2019 until this past season, that was Nick Bosa and Eric Armstead.
And then it was waves of people, right?
And then just a bunch of guys that were really solid at what they were, but they weren't superstars, right? And you're talking about Samson Ebukam and Charles Omenihu and Jordan Willis and Kevin Givens and DJ Jones and right. And it just felt like there were just waves of dudes coming in. You know, I think about that playoff run in 2021 when they went into Green Bay and beat the Packers, and even the playoff run in 2022 when, you know, D'Amico Ryans was just cooking with gas. And like I said, that defensive line was getting consistent pressure, but it wasn't the same guys all the time. It was just wave after wave after wave.
In 2021 too. I just remember Dak was like shook.
Yeah.
It was just constant pressure and they're just rotating. And so, I mean, that makes sense. That seems like it's the thought process, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you think about it and you're like, all right, well, let's just think about position wise, right? Like, so let's think about the edge spot opposite Nick Bosa. Who was there this season? Well, it was Chase Young, it was Randy Gregory, and it was Drake Jackson before he was injured. Not a lot of production out of that. Now you bring in Leonard Floyd, who has averaged 10 sacks a season for the last four seasons. Like, that's already more productive than that three-headed monster that they tried to have with those players. So right now, at edge, you did get an upgrade with Leonard Floyd. And not only that, but Leonard Floyd is actually decent against the run as well. And then you look at each...
They haven't had a player opposite Bosa, I don't think, I forget the year, but was more than 6.5 sacks in quite a while on that edge spot.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been
a bit. And then you look at guys like Yeter Gross-Matos, who is just a very flexible player that you can have play outside or inside. And then you look at Jordan Elliott, who is a run stuffer at D tackle. 310 pounds. And then you look at
Is he a run stuffer? Because here's the thing. Okay, so listen. I saw the stat go through that he had. It was his run stop percent or whatever. His run win percentage is good.
Run
so
stop
I didn't know rate, anything about Jordan Elliott. I don't fucking know anything about the guy. So I'm trying to just research him, and everything I saw was negative. His PFF scores are in the 40s. People who write for the Browns were like, you know, in the run game, he disappears. He takes bad angles. He's missed like 11% of his tackles. I saw one that was 11%, one that was 8.7%. In every, I'm just kind of like around Twitter, wherever, just trying to find stuff. Every Browns fan is like, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. They couldn't wait to get rid of him. And then you go through and people are like, well, yeah, I saw this stat. He's, you know, he's a good run defender. I don't know if he is. Is he?
You know whose ass he kicked this year? The 49ers. He kicked their ass in Cleveland.
Did he have a good game? Maybe.
Yeah.
Did he? It was that game and they were like, hey, look at this guy.
And then Leonard Floyd also kicked the 49ers ass.
Well, Leonard Floyd. So I really like the Leonard Floyd signing. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think it's going to be for more than a year. Cause if you look at the contract, it looks like it's $12 million guaranteed and it's 2-year, $20 million contract. Mm-hmm. They can probably get out of it after a year. I like that. That's a really solid bet signing for a team that's probably, you know, taking another run at the Super Bowl. I really, really like that. The Gross Matos signing. Look, we've seen guys like this come in before, like Charles Amenihue, where you were like, who the hell is this guy?
That's exactly who he reminds me of.
But he's a guy that they see something in that maybe they can build and develop around. The Jordan Elliott thing again. So again, I like what they're doing at edge, and you could put Gross Matos inside when you're on third downs or in pass rush situations. The defensive tackle is what scares me. When I got up this morning, I tweeted something. My top 10 worries at defensive tackle was what worried me, because I'm not buying a Jordan Elliott. Eric Armstead was a phenomenal player, despite what people want to say, or because he was hurt, he was phenomenal. So was not buying him. Like, we got issues at defensive tackle. But then they make the Malik Collins trade today, and I really like that trade. If you look at that, because he's really good at pass rusher. He played with D'Amico Ryans. He gets what they want to do. But if you look at that contract too, it's a 2-year, $20 million deal that he has right now, which is part of his extension that he signed. But after this year, after 2024, he's got no guaranteed money.
Yeah.
So they can just kind of move on from it. So what do I think about what they've done? Like you said, I think what they're trying to do is build waves of defensive players that on the D-line that you could just put in. Where I worry is after 2024, Brian, are any of the guys that they signed going to be on the team? I don't know. It depends. So they're kind of putting themselves in a position where maybe like, okay, we sign these sort of Floyd is a vet. He's 32. So I don't know how long he's got left. But the other guys, you're like, we sign these guys. We'll see what they can do. Collins is 29. He's been around, but still, we'll see what they can do in our system. Now, are they going to extend them next year? Or are we in the same boat next year? That's kind of where my thought process is with it, is you're doing these Band-Aids and that's fine on the defensive line. We'll see what it does for 2024, but are we retooling for the future? Are you going to draft defensive linemen? And we'll see, but that's kind of where my head is my wheels turn.
I feel like, again, you know, none of these contracts are more than 2 years in length, which tells me that likely that they don't necessarily see these guys as future pieces past 2024. But I think what this allows them to do is, I don't think they had any intention of upgrading the offensive line through free agency, because I think they realized that they probably couldn't afford to do that.
Right.
And so what they're doing here is saying, all right, well, when we would normally want to draft edge players, you know, with high round picks or D tackles with high round picks, let's plug the holes on the defensive line and make the defensive line a little more whole, so that when we go into the draft, we have the flexibility to focus on the other side of the line, the offensive line. I honestly think that's what they're doing, because you look at their free agent signings, none of them are on the offensive side of the ball. Now, to be fair, the offense is coming back. There's nobody from the offense that isn't from the starting offense that isn't coming back next year. So there's not a whole lot to do on the offensive side, but there is room for upgrades, especially along the offensive line. And they're sitting in a really unique spot at 31, where I don't know that you're guaranteed to get like an absolute stud at tackle, but what you can get is a guy that's really good at, you know, like, I think like a Kingsley Suamaitai from BYU, who is an absolute road grader in the run game, which probably gives Kyle Shanahan a little chub, but his pass protection is where he needs to be a little, he needs to be coached up. Well, that's why he's going to be there at 31 and not gone at top 10, right? Because exactly. A guy like that, if he's also an elite pass protector, he's going to go early. So the guys that are going to be available at 31 are going to be guys that are good at one thing, but probably need coaching up in another. But they've got the opportunity there, right? Because they've still got Trent Williams on the left side. And if they do draft a tackle, then maybe you do put them in at right tackle to start and you move McKivitz inside. And now you've upgraded right tackle and right guard, or you bring out, you bring Feliciano back and you start Feliciano at right guard. You have a competition between McKivitz and the rookie. Maybe McKivitz beats him out. And if that's the case, that's fine. You still got this rookie who is going to get reps and whatnot. So I think what they decided to do was use free agency to address some of the holes on defense.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You brought up something I kind of want to play devil's advocate, though. You brought up the tackle at the end of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up a great point. I don't remember which show it was, but about how the Saints used to build around Drew Brees up the middle, essentially,
yeah.
Right? With their guards and their center or whatever else. Where did the Chiefs draft Creed Humphrey? It was late first, early second. If I remember.
Second
what,
round.
Right?
Second round.
Okay.
Yep.
So what if you get stud center? What if you get a stud guard and you start building around your quarterback that you're apparently going to give a bag to in a year?
Mm-hmm.
What if you look at it that way? And you know McKivitz is serviceable. And again, I don't love McKivitz. I do need to upgrade there. But
yeah.
I just feel like where they got in trouble, I feel like, because you talked about the Lance drafts, and we have all offseason to talk about this. I have a million thoughts on that, believe me. But they needed to hit on guys in those drafts, and they really haven't yet. You know, not on the lines anyway. They did good in the secondary with Lenore and Hufanga and obviously Purdy, but they haven't gotten the blue chip guys out of those last three drafts like they typically do. So when you look at how they're trying to build now, are they going to build around Purdy, like with these interior guys? And I don't want them to get in a situation where they were with Kinlaw in 2020, where they're like, we got our Armstead, we got to take a defensive tackle.
Right.
Tristan Wirfs is sitting there, let's trade back. I don't want them to do that, to think like, we have to take a tackle. I want them to be like, we're taking the best fucking player. Like, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, let everything else kind of fall where they may, because now – this team is not in the position anymore. They are loaded. They do still have a great roster, but Eric Armstead is the first domino to fall. after 2024, is Kittle around? Is Debo around? Is Juszczyk around? You know, are these guys around? And you got to have guys to come in. You need blue chippers to come in and take the place if you're going to continue to be a Super Bowl contender. So that's kind of where I am with that. I don't want them to draft for need. I want them to just take the best dudes and then be able to build the team around that. So, you know, they've done what they had to do, I guess, in free agency. It's felt a little bit to me like we're just throwing shit against the wall and what sticks, great. So we got these four defensive linemen. If two of them stick, awesome, right? Like, we got two guys, we'll extend them. And if two don't, whatever, we'll move on. That's what it kind of feels like to me. And it kind of does feel like to me too, like Brandon Staley is, you know, listen, he coached Leonard Floyd. He obviously had it, you know, Kendrick. Yeah. Like, his blueprint is, and it's fine. He's the assistant head coach, and he's obviously overseeing the defense, regardless of who the defensive coordinator is.
Yeah.
But that just kind of feels like where it's heading to me right now.
Yeah. And I think that was all part of the plan, right? You know, we talked about it, that Brandon Staley was going to help bring in some outside influence to help the defense evolve in ways that they thought that Steve Wilks might be able to do, and it didn't work out. And so part of why they felt like it didn't work out was because Steve Wilks came from the outside and then was put in charge of the defense. So they said, listen, we'll promote a guy that has been with us, that understands what we're doing, but we're also going to bring in a guy that is going to help him when it comes to, again, evolving the defense, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I do think that Brandon Staley, some of this has some of it is his influence. But the other thing is, you look at, and this is relatively similar to, you know, the entire situation when the 49ers traded DeForest Buckner. And then the reason they did that was because Buckner's contract alone was going to make it where they could not afford to sign Eric Armstead or Jimmy Ward. So they chose Jimmy Ward and Eric Armstead over DeForest Buckner. Now it feels like they are choosing these four guys that they signed over Eric Armstead, because combined those three are making $31 million. Eric Armstead was going to make $28 million. So again,
quantity over quality.
It's right. And again, it's because you have Nick Bosa and you're paying him a king's ransom, and you have Javon Hargrave, who you paid a lot of money to last offseason. So that's the thing, in a salary cap league, you can't have 22 superstars, right? Like,
right.
I think we've gotten accustomed to this idea that, you know, there are stars all over the field for the 49ers, and there are, but the problem is that those stars have now gone on to their second contracts or their third contracts, and they're hella expensive. And so, you know, you're going to have some just guys, right? That you think, hey, this guy's not a superstar, but like a Leonard, like 10 sacks is not anything to sneeze at, right? Or so I think that is what they're doing. And, you know, again, like I said, this is a consequence of kicking the can down the road as often as they have. And now you're having to let go of some guys that you might have thought you weren't going to let go of, right? And that goes back to Mike Silver's article about some of the difficult conversations that the 49ers were prepared to have. And personally, I think one thing that came up today that I think is interesting and is a difficult conversation, but one that I've had with a handful of people on Twitter, is Jason LaCanfora on his radio show in Baltimore said that the Ravens reached out to the 49ers about the possible availability and trade of one Debo Samuel, who is set to count as $28 million against the cap for the 49ers in 2024.
And he said it's a no for now, you know, we'll see what happens. Did you see the Calvin Ridley deal today?
Yeah. Rand Carthen inadvertently just absolutely screwed over the 49ers and John Lynch.
So he got,
when it comes to the Brandon Ayuk discussion,
4 years, $92 million and 50 guaranteed, right?
Yeah.
So Ayuk's going to get north of that, or he's going to ask for it. Mm-hmm. He's been much more accomplished than Ridley is.
Yeah.
So
that's the issue.
That's where they are with that. And he's one of the guys, Brian Ayuk, I feel like. So the last four drafts, we talk about how you're talking about how good this roster is. Well, now you have to pay the quarterback. Yeah. So you have to pick and choose. You can play. That's one thing. But two, the Niners from 2017 through 2020, because I count Ayuk, had drafted a blue chip type dude that you're going to pay long term. So you Kittle, Warner, Bosa, Debo, Ayuk. I'm missing somebody in a draft, but Greenlaw, guys like that, that you're going to pay. I'm going to ask you, so I'm going to go back to the Trey Lance drafts, okay? Who are you paying? And if you're paying them, are they a cornerstone? Are they a Kittle? Are they a Warner? Are they a Bosa? Okay. And I'll just go through the guys who I think you might, or still on the team. Hufanga, are you paying him?
I think it just depends on how he comes back from his injury. That's the hard part.
Is he a cornerstone blue chip build around guy?
Probably not a cornerstone,
it's,
no.
It's safety, no. Agree. Yeah. Lenore.
Maybe.
I think you extend him, but is he a cornerstone?
I think he could be. I think he's working his way there. Again, it's just time will tell.
So one possible.
Yeah.
Aaron Banks.
Probably not,
right? He's probably not going to get a second contract. And if it is, they're not going to pay him big bucks. And he's not a cornerstone guy.
No.
So you have maybe one possible cornerstone, if you want to argue Hufanga. But again, the secondary, it's not lines, it's not receivers, it's not quarterback. Mm-hmm. 2022 Purdy, gigantic cornerstone there, right? And then 2000, he's the only one. I mean, that draft, you have Drake Jackson, Davis Price, Danny Gray, Spencer Burford, Samuel Womack, Nick Sakel, Kalia Davis, Castro Fields. None of those guys are cornerstone guys that you're going to give a second contract to or even let in the building come August. and then this past draft, and somebody brought up a really good question. I got to go back to it. This last draft was a really good tight end draft. And in the chat, somebody asked about the Charlie Warner being gone and what Montu did last year. Do we like any tight ends in this draft? I don't know yet because I haven't really started looking at the draft that will after free agency. But last year was the tight end draft. There were a lot of good tight ends in that draft.
But they were all gone by the time the 49ers got to pick. That's the issue.
True. A lot of them were, but
yeah. No, all of them were. That's why they got Latu. But like all of the ones that in a historic tight end draft, right? All of the ones that people had predicted as a first or second rounder all went in the first or second round. And so Latu was
a product. What's that a product of? Why didn't the Niners have a first round pick?
Right, exactly. Or a second round pick.
Wait, that was McCaffrey. Was McCaffrey the second round pick?
I'm just saying they didn't have a first or second round pick in that draft. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Which made it impossible for them to jump in on that tight end class.
Yeah. Yeah. And they end up with Latu, who looks like, I mean, they put him on injured reserve, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Didn't do well. And then Braden Willis, we'll see. But I guess so the point I'm trying to get with this is you're going to pay Purdy. Great. You got the quarterback. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Other than that, in those three drafts, you didn't get a Warner. You didn't get a Kittle. You didn't get a Bosa. Yeah. You didn't get a Debo, right? You didn't get any of those guys. So, like, who are you sort of building around moving forward with those drafts, you know? So, that's Ayuk is the one guy, I feel like, of the most recent drafts that you got to kind of give it back to. And I hope that they do. We'll see what happens, especially with these contracts, though.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and when I read that Lock and Fora, it's not a report, it was a tweet, but I thought that was really interesting because, you know, we talked about whether or not Debo was going to be on this team past 2024, and both you and I don't think that he will, but I went on to SpotTrack and looked at Debo's contract and looked at what it would look like if they were to trade him. And there's two options, right? You trade pre 6-1 or you trade post 6-1. Well, the problem is if you're looking to trade Debo, obviously you're looking for something in return, something of value in return, because there's no reason for them to get rid of Debo outside of that. If they were to trade him pre 6-1, they would get $6.8 million of cap relief for 2024. And then he would have a dead cap hit of $21 million. And then in 2025, they would just be done with Debo Samuel. If mm-hmm. you were to trade him post 6-1, that the cap relief you get this year, this season, doubles. But he would count $15 million in dead cap in 2025. Now, there's also a situation where the 49ers have an out in his contract after the 2024 season, in which they would pay him $15 million and he would mm-hmm. be gone. And we've talked about them probably going that route. And if that's the case, that means that next year, Arik Armstead and Debo Samuel will count $30 million against the 2025 cap as dead cap money. That's brutal. But if you were to trade Debo now, like I said, you don't get that $15 million dead cap hit in 2025. You get a $21 million dead cap hit in 2024, but you still get a $7 million cap relief. And so if the Ravens call up, The question becomes what is valuable return for Debo Samuel at this point, right? Mm-hmm. That's the biggest question. And to me, it would be 2024 draft capital and or some kind of player swap and draft capital. But I don't know. I don't really know what that would look like.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if you do that, right, if you trade Debo, you know, for the reasons you said or whatever, are you kind of punting on this year without punting on this year? So now you got rid of Debo. So now you got rid of Armstead. Mm-hmm. And you're going for it, but you got all these new pieces on the defensive line, and you just lost a huge part of your offense, and Kittle's a year older. So that's a little bit too where it's like, where are they? where do they stand? Which makes the Super Bowl just such a kick in the balls. That was their chance.
Yeah.
That was, I just feel like with this core, and one of the core is already gone. Mm-hmm. So with this core, I just felt like that was it. And now that it's not there, you have this sort of retooling, where do we go type thing. And you're starting to hear things like that. Like, well, is Debo Samuel available? You know, is George Kittle going to be there next year? Those are the questions that are starting to pop up. And the other thing that I was thinking about this morning, when I was thinking about like all their needs, when is Hufanga ready? When is Greenlaw ready? Is it middle of the season before these guys are really ready to go or really ready to be themselves? You know, they were both major injuries. And even if they come back early, still have to get back into, you know, game shape and game speed and things like that. So I just, this year, I feel like last year was all in and everybody felt it, right? This team is loaded. We're ready to go. And there's still a lot of that. I'm not saying they're not going to make playoffs. I still think they're a playoff team.
Oh, but yeah, for sure.
Are things just starting to unravel a little bit, which happens because people don't play until they're 50 years old, right? Like,
right.
It happens. People get older contracts. What are we doing now to still compete this year? I think that's what you're seeing right now. But and then in 2025 and beyond, are you still going to be able to compete? And I think really the easy answer is let's hope Brock Purdy becomes Drew Brees light, right?
Right.
And you have a quarterback that you is, and he looks like he's at least, I feel like with Purdy, even worst case scenario, he's a top 10, 15 guy that you could win with. Worst case scenario.
Yeah.
You know, your Kirk Cousins, your Dak Prescott, things like that. He's already made a Super Bowl. So he's,
right,
in my opinion, you know, kind of over those guys or whatever. But like worst case scenario, he's in that like very good, you're going to stick with him, he's going to make a lot of money category. Best case scenario, I don't think he's Patrick Mahomes. I don't think he's Josh Allen. But is he sort of right below there? Can he hover in that 5-6 range? Maybe. But that's probably what you're looking at, is the Niners are going to have to build around him and Bosa. Bosa has a small cap hit next year. I think in 2025, maybe it goes up to $42 million. At some point, it goes up really high. So at some point, they're paying two quarterbacks essentially between Bosa and between Purdy. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and you know, that's the other thing about Deebo Samuel. You and I talked about it recently as well. Nick Bosa has a $42 million cap hit in 2026.
Okay, and it's pretty reasonable until then, right? Isn't it like 14 million, 20 million?
So 2024, it's 14.6 million. 2025, it's 20.5 million. And then in 2026, it's 42 million. In 2027, it's 52 million. And then in 2028, it's 42.8 million. But, you know, we talked about it in terms of this idea of perhaps the offense may start to evolve a little bit with Brock Purdy and what he has proven to Kyle Shanahan, because, you know, Deebo Samuel is, I like to think that Deebo Samuel is essentially a training wheels player for a team with suspect quarterback play, right? Like what Deebo Samuel is best at, and he's arguably the best in the NFL at, are things that you need him to do when you don't trust your quarterback to make plays down the field or to make correct reads and things of that nature. And Brock Purdy, at least last season, kind of put it out there that for the first time in a long time, the 49ers have pretty competent play at the quarterback position, and the type of play that doesn't need training wheels like what Deebo Samuel offers, right? Quick slants, tunnel screens, being in the back, all of that, right? And so again, does the absence of Deebo Samuel in this offense, which in 2024 there was that three game stretch where he was out, but for two of those games Trent was also out, and the offense looked pretty terrible. But there was also a three game stretch at the end of 2023 where Deebo was out and the offense or the team put up, was a 37, 21, and 32 or something like that. While he was out. So would the offense take a step back if Deebo Samuel wasn't in it? Well, probably, but would you be able to replace Deebo Samuel with 75% of his production with somebody else, whether that be a draft pick or whether that be somebody that you pick up? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but like I said, to me, it's far more palatable to take a $21 million cap hit, $21 million dead cap hit this season, gain a little bit of cap relief this season, to be fair, and not have $30 million in 2025 going to Deebo Samuel and Eric Armstead. It's an interesting conversation. Again, this is not me saying I don't like Deebo Samuel. I don't think he should be on the team. I don't think he's good. It's none of that. Deebo Samuel is awesome. He's incredible at what he is good at. But there are flaws in his game. Those flaws, I think, were really highlighted in the Super Bowl. Now, you could also say, were they highlighted because he was playing injured? You know, he tweaked his hamstring early in the game. Maybe that was part of the issue. I wouldn't begrudge you that point, but when you look at when you look at his line from the Super Bowl, he had three catches on 11 targets. Brandon Ayuk only had six targets. Yeah. Brandon Ayuk only had six targets. Juwan Jennings had five targets and George Kittle had three targets. The offensive game plan obviously was Deebo centric and Deebo heavy. And it didn't work. It didn't work at all. It stalled in the second half and they didn't play well. If you've got a Brandon Ayuk and another wide receiver who, once the Chiefs switch to a press man heavy game plan, can still get separation because they are route technicians, maybe you fare better with Brock Purdy back there. I don't know. I don't know the answer, but these are, like Mike Silver said, these are part of the hard conversations that this team has to have. Because they are up against the cap and they've got a lot of superstars and they've got a plan for the future, and all of that revolves around probably saying goodbye to some pretty popular guys either this year or next year. And maybe this year it is just Eric Armstead and then everything else stays the same. They make these, you know, these small signings, you know, they go into the draft, they draft some players that they hope can contribute in 2024. And they try this last ride, but I just don't see this team looking anything like it does right now in 2025. And then the question is, do we take some of that medicine now and still try and compete for a Super Bowl? Is there medicine we could take now and still compete for the Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. Like, again, if we trade Debo, does that automatically, you know, take us out of contention? I don't know that it does. So they're all just interesting questions. And, you know, when people get upset about, you know, if you tweet something about, you know, Debo Samuel, or it's like, why does everyone want to get rid of Debo Samuel? It's like, I don't want to get rid of Debo Samuel. It's just questions. They're just questions. They're just discussions. That's the whole point.
And knowing this is probably his last year on the team. Yeah. It probably is. And this is it's a really deep wide receiver class. Mm-hmm. They got to get one. To me, we just talked about the tight end class that they missed on because they didn't have picks early. But this year you have a lot of picks. I can get receivers throughout the draft. You got to get one or two. You got to take advantage of this class. Two, like you brought up what I got shows. I forget what we do, but playing to Purdy's strengths. You got to get wide receivers that mesh well with Brock Purdy. And there's so many good receivers in this draft. You can't let that go by the wayside. You just can't. So we'll see. They have, 11 draft picks, maybe 10 now with the Collins trade. I don't know. But they have a lot.
Yeah.
But again, this isn't – they're retooling. These are this is a huge draft. This is the biggest draft the Niners have had in a really long time, I feel like. Because if this draft is like the last three, might be a little bit of trouble. If it's like some of the other ones where you got some blue chip guys in there, maybe you keep this window going.
Well, and I think what's interesting about, and I think this probably also speaks to a little bit of what they've been doing, or at least their philosophy when it comes to free agency this season, is a lot of areas where the 49ers need to fill some holes are the areas that have a deep draft class, and that's wide receiver, cornerback, tackle, and I think I nailed it, right? Offensive tackle, wide receiver, and cornerback. I was trying to think, and then areas where this draft is weak, you've seen them kind of hit in free agency, right? It is a weak linebacker class, so they bring in Eric Kendricks. It isn't a super strong edge class, so they bring in Floyd and Yetur Gross-Matos. And it's an average D tackle class. So they brought in some cheap, veterans. And then I imagine that they'll probably attack that position in the draft along with offensive line, wide receiver, and cornerback, because that's where it's deep. So again, I think they have, it seems to me like we're starting to see their plan unfold a little bit when we kind of take a step back and get out of the mindset of like, I just want them to sign this awesome player, right? Like Danielle Hunter, how awesome would Danielle Hunter have been? 100%. Danielle Hunter got a 2-year, $50 million contract from the Houston Texans. The 49ers weren't going to be able to pay him $25 million. Like that, just let's not even fret on that, right? There was no way that was happening. So they are doing what they can to upgrade the line. And I think they've done that. I think the defensive line now is better than it was last season. There are people that disagree with that because they have, you know, Chase Young was drafted number 2 overall, glasses on. Yeah, I agree. He was drafted number 2 overall, but he didn't produce like a number 2 overall pick. So where he was drafted doesn't really matter. He didn't produce for the 49ers. So they said, see you later. You know, so I think if we take a step back and we just say, listen, we understand this team is up against the salary cap. They're not going to be able to make this massive splash signings. They're going to do their best to bring in role players that they think, hey, Chris Kocurek is going to coach these guys up, and you know, they're going to end up leaving after a year or two for, you know, a high price contract somewhere else, and we'll just repeat this process, right? But I just think that they have an eye towards the draft for some of these positions that we're screaming for them to fill, because they know they don't have the cap space to be able to fill it with veterans. And so that's, again, offensive line, wide receiver, and the cornerback position.
All right, we got to get up out of here. Next week, we got our buddy John Chapman coming on with us. John is always optimistic. I'm so much not. So it's always a good conversation when I talk about John. But listen, if you guys, we're going to be on YouTube. We're going to start live streaming. You know, Brian and I are going to start doing some you know, little things here and there on YouTube. We want to build up this YouTube station up. Please subscribe to the 49ers Web Zone YouTube station. There's a lot of really cool stuff coming. We have a lot of great guests. I mean, if you follow us, you know, we've had Peter King, Brian Baldinger, Cynthia Freeland, Mike Silver. We have a lot of
Mark really cool guests
on our show. Mark Schlereth, exactly. Yeah, just so many great big names we've had on. We'll continue to do that throughout the summer in the off season. So subscribe, man. And then you could look at Brian and I, our beautiful faces and our bald heads.
Even though that's right. And then also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Again, we are the 49ers Web Zone No Huddle Podcast, a part of the Odyssey Network. And you can get the podcast anywhere you get your favorite podcasts.
Anywhere. Thanks, everybody.
Later.
9-0-3! 1-2-3!
.400 Sports is an Odyssey company.